From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block. Over the past two decades, the number of young women arrested for serious crimes in this country has soared. And though boys still far outnumber them, the thousands of girls in juvenile courts and detention centers are straining the resources and the capabilities of a system that wasn't designed for them. Today, the first of a series of stories looking at girls and juvenile justice. We begin in Florida. 3 years ago, the state opened its first ever maximum security facility for girls. The Florida Institute for Girls in West Palm Beach is the last stop in the juvenile system before adult prison. NPR's Debbie Elliott met with some of the girls there and has their stories.
17-year-old Grace has been here for 10 months.
I know I can't shave my arms and stuff.
When you get to graduate, you do.
Yeah.
How are you making?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, are you serious?
Grace and three other teenagers are huddled on a bed, giggling about when they'll finally get to shave their legs again. It's the kind of scene you might expect at a slumber party, only this bed is in a locked 6x10 cell. And instead of pajamas, the girls are wearing prison blues.
If I would never got locked up here, I would have probably with a kid or dead or somewhere else.
Grace is locked up on a grand theft auto charge. Like all the girls in this story, her name has been changed to protect her privacy. She describes spending her teen years on the streets, involved in all sorts of crime. She used drugs and for a time lived with an aunt she calls a bad crackhead who prostituted Grace out to drug dealers.
It's hard living up, like on the streets and stuff without your parents. It's hard living that thug life, you know, whatever they call it. I wish I could rewind my life.
Her story of a troubled childhood is a common thread among most of the girls here and among the countless others who are pouring into corrections facilities around the country. Broken homes, drug and alcohol abuse, dropping out of school, and a family history of criminal activity are the norm. Grace grew up in West Palm Beach.
My dad was like, he always worked and went to AA meetings. And then it was me and my sister and my little brother that we actually took care of ourselves. I had a place to live, but we didn't have no food, so we had to go ask like the neighbors and stuff. My mom left when I was like 6 or something. She wasn't all that much support to us.
As she talks, Grace smooths her blonde hair, which is slicked back with hair gel into a spiky ponytail at the crown of her head. Her dad had a serious alcohol and drug addiction. And when he was on a binge, the state would come and put the kids in foster care. It was confusing, she says.
I never understood until I finally got locked up and I got to have sessions with him and stuff. And we really got to talk about, like, all that stuff. We talked about, like, that it wasn't my fault that my mom left and stuff.
Her therapy here has helped her deal with all kinds of issues, including memories of her baby sister's death. Something it took family counseling to get the truth about.
My dad was doing crack with my mom in their bedroom, and my sister somehow got out of her crib and walked in the backyard in our pool and drowned in our pool. But all I can remember about her is when they took her out of the pool, when they just started pumping her stomach.
So many of the young women here at the Florida Institute for Girls have similar stories. Director Jackie Lane says half are being treated for serious mental health problems. It's part of the process of recognizing that most of them are not only criminals, but victims too.
When we first started, we really didn't have an idea, didn't have a clue. One is we didn't know how deeply disturbed these girls were going to be, and they were incredibly disturbed, still are. That's part of the system as a whole, and not just Florida. That's the nation as a whole has failed to address girls and the needs of girls and to identify that girls have the ability and are as aggressive or more so than boys.
Lane says most of the girls were sent here after some violent episode at a detention center or less restrictive program, usually attacking staff or another girl. But some are sent straight here because they've done something really bad.
These girls have become society's secret. Nobody wants to know about these girls. They don't want to know that this girl killed a child. that's just not acceptable. Girls don't do those kinds of things. Or that this girl made a lot of money being a prostitute. Our girls don't do that.
Staff here keep a tight rein on the girls as they move through their daily routine.
2 ma'am.
3 ma'am.
4 ma'am.
5 ma'am.
6 ma'am.
They are patted down after lunch and have to count off as they exit the dining hall in a single file line. Those who cause trouble are confined to their cells and not allowed to attend classes or other activities. In the dorms each afternoon, the girls gather in a large circle for group sessions. At the end of this Alateen meeting in the Foxtrot dorm, one girl turns to her neighbor and touches her hand. The gesture is then passed around the circle.
I put my hand on your head because I care.
I put my hand on your head because I care.
18-year-old Hope from Bradenton has curly blonde hair and rosy cheeks. After the meeting, she describes growing up in a family of alcohol and drug abusers. She left home for the first time when she was 12 and spent much of her adolescence on the streets.
Going out, stealing from people, just doing things that a child shouldn't have to live that life. Parents in jail, both of them are in jail, so you don't have nowhere to go. People don't care about you, so you have to live on your own.
Her dad is jailed for driving under the influence, her mom for possession of crack and prostitution. Her mother used to prostitute Hope for drug money, and then the daughter struck out on her own.
Now I followed her lead, and now I'm here, but I'm done with that. I've been pregnant, lost a child, and it's hard. And if I wasn't doing drugs, it wouldn't have never happened. I would probably had a child, but I was 13 at the time, so I wasn't ready.
The man who got her pregnant was a 23-year-old drug dealer.
They say young and dumb. That's what I was. I'm just falling in love because he gave me whatever I wanted. Anything I wanted, it was there. Drugs, food, clothes, anything. It was there.
But he's also the reason she lost her baby.
Because my boyfriend threw a phone at my stomach. And I just felt 3 kicks and then that was it.
Hope has been here for 14 months. She says sometimes she feels like she's stuck in a cage, but she acknowledges she's better off here than on the streets. She's discovered an escape now that she has earned her way into the Books and Breakfast Club, which meets once a month over donuts to discuss books with a group of women lawyers.
I put myself in that book so that everything negative in this place, with all the girls trying to bring me down, I just put myself in the book and be like, this is where I'm at. And nobody can bring me down. I love it.
And she's starting to make plans for the future.
I want to be a child care worker. I want to work with children who have problems like me. I want to show them that there's somebody there that really cares about them.
They're tough and tender, all at the same time.
Marcia Guthrie is a compliance officer at the Institute.
They're just little girls. Every one of them, from the toughest to the smartest to the slowest. There are little girls underneath. They like to play with little dolls. Recently, we upgraded the program, and we're providing some more incentives for them, and we purchased things like teddy bears. Place went wild. Every girl wanted a teddy bear.
Many of the girls here are grasping for something they missed out on growing up.
I didn't get much of a child's life.
A small, frail girl with short-cropped brown hair asked to be called Zipporah. She's 18, but looks more like 12. She's already lived through more than most people face in a lifetime. Repeated sexual abuse, drug addiction, and seeing her aunt beat to death.
I've been through a suicidal phase, a homosexual phase, all kinds of things.
The abuse started when she was just 6 years old.
I was sexually abused by some of my mom's boyfriends, sometimes close friends of the family, and even my best friend's brother. I was always threatened, you tell, I'll kill you, your mom. My mom was my weak spot.
Zipporah always felt responsible for taking care of her mother, who has epilepsy. Her father left when she was born. She has a lot of anger. Zipporah is here for multiple assaults on both staff and her peers at other facilities. One fight started after a girl said something about her mother.
I had grabbed her and started throwing her head into the ground, and I dropped one of the portable, like, little microwave things on her side.
Zipporah first got in trouble when she was 13.
Started off just like not coming home, staying at friends, going to parties, drinking. I used to see my mom used to drink to take away stress when she was beat. So I thought it was a coping skill.
When that didn't work, she turned to drugs. Now she's learned other ways to cope with her anger, like putting her feelings to paper. She recently wrote this poem, inspired by a work by Antoine Fisher, but with her own experiences.
Who will cry for the little girl that rests inside of me? Who will cry for the little girl that wants to be free? Who will cry for the little girl whose life was shattered? Who will cry for the little girl who was sexually battered? Who will cry for the little girl who hides behind a closed door? Who will cry for the little girl that will be inside of me forevermore?
Zipporah will finish the program in a few months and is hoping to get her writings published. And because she's 18 now, there are no resources to help her make it on the outside. Debbie Elliott, NPR News.
Next week, part two of our series on girls and juvenile justice, we'll go to Boston, where the justice system is struggling with the special needs and concerns of girls.